This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Finish line is in sight. A week from today, Americans vote in a new president. But as breathless pundits handicap the polls and the electoral vote, we want to fast forward to January. A new president surveys the state of the country and the world and finds a bit of a mess. A global financial crisis, a deep recession, wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, a resurgent Iran and Russia, an Israeli-Palestinian peace process at square one, and oh yeah, that bin Laden problem. The new president is going to need the help of the best and the brightest to navigate those tricky waters. So let's move now to the world from the world of swing states and ground games and into fantasy. What's the White House dream team, the fantasy draft? Who do you think President Obama or President McCain should tap as Secretary of State or Defense to run the Department of Energy or Interior or Education, Intelligence Czar, National Security Advisor or Attorney General? And oh yeah, we just might need a pretty good Secretary of the Treasury. Call or email us with a nomination for a specific job, whichever one you want. One to a customer, please. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also appoint a cabinet member on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, we want to hear from those of you who plan not to vote this year. You can send us an email now to tell us why, talk@npr.org. But first, the cabinet dream team. We stole this idea from a couple of places. One of them was Foreign Policy magazine. Joining us now is one of the folks who did their picks, Robert Baer, a former CIA case officer assigned to the Middle East, as well as the author of, most recently, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. He joins us today from the studios of KUCI in Irvine, California. Nice to have you on the program.
It's great to be here.
And we have to begin with one of your seriously out there picks, the one who's not alive.
Buckminster Fuller.
Yeah, great choice, but, going to have a hard time raising his hand to be sworn in.
We are, but we need a visionary. And I'm not sure I can identify him, but we have to change the way we're doing things. The Middle East is hopelessly broken. We're not going to spread democracy. At the best, we're going to be in another war. It looks like Syria now. So in the Middle East is about oil and it's about Israel, and we have to change the way we're doing things. And in order to do that, we need to change the way we're doing things here at home. And we need somebody, a great mind that can look at history, look at the future. We need somebody who can give us a Manhattan Project, like in World War II when we developed a nuclear bomb, someone who can assemble a team of people who can think our way out of this problem.
Well, that would be the president. You're not only thinking out of the box, you're thinking out of the casket.
I'm thinking out of the casket. It would be the president, but the president's going to have a foreign policy advisor that can coordinate with Department of Energy, with EPA, and down the line. We are so beholden to the Second World War and the way we've done things during the Cold War that we're actually stuck, and somebody from the outside, I hate to use the phrase, outside the box, has got to come in and fix things.
Yet you go with a very consensus pick for a Secretary of Defense. You suggest the guy who's there now might want to stay.
Bob Gates, yes. He did oversee the surge. He has said we cannot attack Iran. He's absolutely right. We're stretched in Afghanistan, in Iraq. He has a nudging agreement with Obama that we need to pull out of Iraq sooner rather than later. He's got experience, and he's going to bring experience to whoever the next president is.
Let's see if we can get some callers in on this conversation. Again, we're talking with Robert Baer, one of the people who made picks for the next administration dream team, the cabinet, when he was asked to do so by Foreign Policy magazine. If you'd like to get in on this fantasy game, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Lynn, and Lynn's on the line with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes. Can I just say one, or can I name several?
Well, you can name one, because we got a lot of people stacked up behind you.
Okay. I want to say Robert Kennedy Jr. for Secretary of the Interior.
And why Robert Kennedy Jr.?
Because I think he has a very good overall view of history and of what's going on with the environment, and of I just think he would be excellent. I've heard him and watched him for the past several years, and he's smart, and he would be different and actually come up with some new ideas.
All right, Lynn, we're going to give you one bonus pick. Go ahead.
Okay, Wesley Clark, Secretary of Defense.
Wesley Clark, the former NATO commander as Secretary of Defense. All right, thanks very much for the call, Lynn.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Joining us now is one of the people who started this project, Blake Hounshell, helped compile Foreign Policy's Dream Team section. He joins us here in Studio 3, and nice to have you on the program today.
Good to be here, Neil.
And you got a lot of overlapping picks.
Yeah, we found a lot of surprising consensus. I think, you mentioned Bob Gates with Bob Baer there, and he's someone that a lot of people said, keep this guy in the job. He's doing great right now. Why screw that up?
And what did you ask people to focus on when making their selections?
Well, we left it open-ended. We really wanted to hear their thoughts, and we wanted them to give a rationale for why they chose the people they did, given all the challenges that the United States faces right now. We're really in this horrible situation. Frankly, I don't know why anyone would want these jobs. They could make a lot more money in the private sector, but we're going to need all the help we can get.
And Foreign Policy Magazine, so you rather sensibly limited the team. You didn't go to Interior or Energy or that sort of thing, but you did include Secretary of Treasury.
Well, I think everyone would tell you right now that that's probably the most important job in the administration. I don't know if you've seen any pictures of Hank Paulson recently, but he looks like he's a man on the verge of some kind of nervous meltdown. And we really need someone who can steer us out of this financial crisis.
Robert Baer, who did you pick as Secretary of the Treasury?
I picked Warren Buffett. Simply because the man foresaw that these derivatives was all fake money, was funny money, and there's $70 trillion of it out there. If anybody can get to the bottom of it and dispose of it quickly and efficiently, it's Warren Buffett.
Yet he's never had any experience running a large administrative agency of the government.
Well, I don't trust people with experience. I mean, we need somebody that can look at this objectively. We need to go to a fact-based world in order to solve these problems. Wishful thinking on Wall Street or foreign policy has just got into more trouble than we need.
You just touted Robert Gates for defense partly because he has experience.
Experience, and for intelligence, I went with Abi Zaid, who called the Iraq war very loudly and very clearly before this war started.
John Abizaid, the former, he was senior...
Commander at CENTCOM.
Commander at CENTCOM, all right.
In charge of the Middle East.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Dan. Dan with us from Burrich, Illinois. And Dan, I think, has left us. Let's go instead now to Ruth. And Ruth's on the line from Sacramento in California.
Hi. For Attorney General Patrick Fitzgerald, who indicted Scooter Libby, honest, straightforward, uncorruptible. Plus, in 2006, I believe, he was voted the sexiest man in the United States. I mean, what more could you want?
I think he's U.S. Attorney in Chicago. Is that right?
Chicago now. That's correct.
Okay, Ruth. Thanks very much for the nomination. And Blake Hounshell, you stuck with the foreign policy side. Some interesting ideas for a national security advisor, too.
Yeah, a national security advisor is a tough one, frankly, because let's be honest, whoever becomes president, whether it's Obama or McCain, they're going to pick someone that they're close to. Remember George Bush in 2001, he chose Condi Rice to be his national security advisor. She was someone who was leading his foreign policy team on the campaign trail. So, frankly, it's likely that whoever is president, they're going to choose someone that they've been close to all along.
Let's get Jane on the line. Jane with us from Morrison in Colorado.
Yeah, I would. I was hoping he would be the vice presidential pick, but I would put forward Bill Richardson for Secretary of State. He's got a lot of experience, and he's got a concise statement, and is not argumentative, you know.
Bill Richardson, the current governor of New Mexico, a former ambassador to the United Nations and former Secretary of Energy. So he's got a lot of experience and has done some diplomatic missions as well overseas. Bill Richardson for Secretary of State, what do you think, Blake Hounshell?
I think I've already heard rumors of that. It's a real possibility. We have no idea if Barack Obama wins. We have no idea what he promised Richardson in exchange for that endorsement this spring. One of the things that Obama has stressed is talking to bad guys, and Richardson's someone who has experience doing that.
Would you be happy, Robert Baer, with Bill Richardson?
I like Bill Richardson. He's very honest. He's very direct. He's been very honest with the press. He's trusted in Washington, and he's He's a smart man.
Trusted in Washington, yet he's not of Washington. He spent most of his time outside the nation's capital.
No, he hasn't been intellectually corrupted by Washington, which is so easily it happens.
I wonder, thanks very much for the call, Jane. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You wonder, there is a process by which on programs like this one and more important programs than this one, boomlets develop, names come to the surface, trial balloons are floated. Blake Hounshell, is that part of your intention here?
I think so. I mean, we were talking to people who definitely have connections and who knows what links they have with the campaigns. But I'm sure that people are going to be watching the names that get floated out there and see what kind of reaction they get. One name that's popping up again and again now is Larry Summers, who was the former Treasury Secretary, and a lot of people think he'll be the next one.
And I wanted to ask you also, Robert Baer, about you got a bonus pick. Everybody in the selection team got a bonus pick, and you took the man who we're seeing on a lot of television advertisements as your Secretary of Energy.
Yeah, T. Boone Pickens, simply because he's an oil man. He's not exactly to be trusted, but he has proposed wind energy, and he's got these huge wind turbines, which he's going to make money from. But the point is, oil is either going to break us financially or kill us through the environment. And, somebody with another idea we need to listen to. And he certainly would know how to get us out of the international oil market.
And he's somebody who, quite literally has put his money where his mouth is.
Exactly. He's very pragmatic. He's not of my political stripe, but that doesn't matter. He knows what he's talking about.
Robert Baer, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate your sharing your list with us.
Thank you.
Robert Baer, the author of The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, a former CIA case officer assigned to the Middle East, joined us today from the studios of KUCI in Irvine, California. So who would you name to the fantasy administration dream team? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation underway on our website, on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We've talked before about fantasy baseball and NCAA brackets. Today, we're dragging politics into the fantasy realm. Who would you nominate as Secretary of Defense or the Treasury or any other cabinet position? One columnist in Chicago wondered what it might be like to have Oprah advising the president. What about your dream team? Call or email us with a nomination for a specific job, whoever you want, one to a customer, please. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also appoint a cabinet member on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We got this from Catherine in Las Vegas. For almost any post, journalist Thomas Friedman, he generally seems to be able to think outside the box. And Aaron in Enid, Oklahoma, wrote us to say, I would draft Hillary Clinton either for attorney general or as a replacement for an open seat on the Supreme Court. She would do a great job. Our guest is Blake Hounshell, online editor for Foreign Policy Magazine. We have a link to their article on the Dream Team at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Dan. Dan with us from Burrich, Illinois. I thought we talked to Dan.
Got disconnected.
But okay, go ahead.
I would like to see a representative of a third party in there, particularly the libertarians, and the only one I can think of that has a libertarian leaning that has a reasonable shot at it is Ron Paul.
Running as a Republican again, as a member of Congress in Texas.
I think he does that as a matter of expediency, because even people who are really fed up with the Republicans and the Democrats don't seriously consider voting for a third party, unfortunately.
And he declined to run for the Libertarian presidential nomination this year. It's Bob Barr, the former Republican congressman from Georgia, who has that honor. And Ron Paul, do you think he would be happy in either a Democratic or a Republican administration?
I think he would be happy depending on what job he was given. Initially, I was thinking Secretary of the Treasury, but he really has a right idea about dismantling the empire, so to think. So as he says, so I think Secretary of Defense would be a good job for him.
Presuming some president got elected who wanted to dismantle the empire.
Yeah, usually you don't hire people for cabinet positions that want to reduce the size of their departments. That's the unfortunate thing.
Dan, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
Thank
it. Foreign Policy isn't the only publication with the Dream Team. EbonyJet.com also posted their White House cabinet picks, calling it the fantasy draft. Brian Gilmore is a contributor. He's a lawyer and writer and with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And your list went pretty deep. Unlike Foreign Policy, you went all the way through the cabinet.
We picked like a lot of the big spots, like HUD and commerce, treasury, energy, things like that.
And who, looking back on it, this was some time ago, who, looking back on it, are some of your more interesting choices, do you think?
I would say my interesting choice was we picked the vice president, and I initially picked Richard Gephardt, and then like a month later they said everybody reassess, and then I actually picked Joe Biden, so I felt sort of big around, you know, the writers who also picked.
That one right.
So that was sort of surprising that I had picked Richard Gephardt, and he's completely off the radar screen on anything.
Might have been the Secretary of Labor, conceivably, in a Democratic administration.
Well, it's possible.
Yeah, and Alexis Herman as Chief of Staff.
Right, I just felt like that Obama was a pragmatist, and I felt like he was going to pick some pros. And Alexis Herman came out early in support of him, and I feel like I know she's involved in the campaign under the radar, so I feel like she would definitely have consideration. She knows how to run things, I think, in the government. I think she's very experienced.
And you nominated as head of the Department of Health and Human Services one John Edwards.
Right. Well, that one was a real... that one collapsed right there. I must say, with the scandal and everything. It's just because of his stands on poverty issues. Felt like he was a logical choice back in June before everything went haywire.
Which does raise, and let me bring Blake Hounshell back into this as well, which does raise a question. You both have compiled lists of people who are going to be named to some of the highest posts in the land, and inevitably at least one of them is going to be leaving office in disgrace and scandal. It's the kiss of death on somebody here, Blake.
Well, you know, it's a percentage game. You know, enough people in the public limelight, someone's going to have to take a fall.
Well, let's see if we get Angela on the line. Angela's calling us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hi. Tammy Duckworth for Secretary of Veteran Affairs.
Tammy Duckworth, that's a veteran herself and ran for Congress?
Yes.
And you get a bonus pick.
Oh, Hillary Clinton for Attorney General or Supreme Court.
Hillary Clinton again. Okay, yes. Thanks very much for
Thank
the call,
you.
Angela. Appreciate it. Any role for Hillary Clinton in the Ebony Jet fantasy draft?
I think Hillary Clinton is staying where she is. She's looking to do some legislation. I think that's what she wants to do, and she wants to be the person who can put her name on that and have Obama sign it when she gets it pushed through.
Let's go to Sam, and Sam's on the line with us from Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, I would definitely pick Lyndon LaRouche for Secretary of Treasury because he's been right on in terms of the financial predictions going back many years. And he's really on top of the worldwide gambling dealing with the derivatives, how we got to shut that down.
And which president do you think would even consider the name of Lyndon LaRouche for a nanosecond?
I don't think they would, but I think we should because, you know, he's been right. And you want to pick someone who's going to help us with this world economy. And can I mention a really quick bonus?
Well, I was just conjuring the image of Lyndon LaRouche's confirmation hearings, but go ahead, one bonus pick.
Definitely George McGovern for Secretary of State. You know, we've killed already a million Iraqis, and we need someone smart, but also someone who's moral.
Right. Thanks very much for the call, Sam. Appreciate it. Here's an email from Kevin in Oklahoma City. Chuck Norris for Secretary of Defense, perhaps in a McCain administration. Jeanette in Berkeley, California, nominates Larry Summers, a former Treasury Secretary of the Treasury, for Secretary of the Treasury. And again, Blake Hounshell, you've got a lot of nominations for Larry Summers.
Yeah, I think we're trying to get him in there if he wants the job. There's some other names being floated out there. Robert Rubin, you know, who is also a former Treasury Secretary. He's another likely candidate.
Let's get Leslie on the line. Leslie with us from West Bloomfield in Michigan.
Well, my people are not as well known as some of the people you've been talking about, but at the local level, I think they've done wonderful jobs. For Education Secretary, quite honestly, I'd like to put my daughter's principal.
Your daughter's principal, is practical experience, I guess, is important in that job.
Yeah, she's done wonders for the school. She has worked as a principal of a girls' school in Saudi Arabia. She's working currently in a Jewish school doing wonders. And, you know, you just see these local people doing local greatness, and you think, wait, you know, they can do greatness on this field. Just imagine what they can do given the opportunity to, have a national scale. Because, I mean, like, there's lots of people I know at the local level that I think would be great at the national level, simply because they bring real-life experience of that field to the job.
Leslie, thanks very much for the thought, and we'll keep your daughter's principle in mind when the subject comes up.
Her name's Terry Gianetti.
Well, think about it. Thanks very much, Leslie. Appreciate the phone call. Who did you nominate for Secretary of Education?
I picked sort of unknown myself, a woman, Diane Schust, who's big in the National Education Association. Now, she's unknown. I would say not really that well known, but she's big on the, I guess what you could say, the grassroots level.
Let's go to Connor. Connor with us from Huntersville in North Carolina.
Yes, I think you guys are jumping on too much Obama. McCain's going to win this. And Tom DeLay is going to be Secretary of Treasury.
Tom the Hammer DeLay of Texas.
Tom DeLay, and then Ann Coulter is going to be Attorney General.
Again, you could look forward to the confirmation hearings.
Right, and Rush Limbaugh is going to be a Communications Director in the White House. Huckabee is going to be Education. And he's going to go across the aisle and pick Biden to be Secretary of State.
That would be an interesting choice. Connor, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, yes.
So long. Let's see if we can get Andy on the line. Andy's calling us from Milwaukee in Wisconsin.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Well, you know, I love the Warren Buffett thing as much as anyone, but I just had a quick question, which is, you know, if he was Commerce Secretary or Treasury Secretary, doesn't he still have a little bit too much in every pot in America, so to speak, to be able to rule without a conflict of interest? I mean, how would someone like that actually be able to serve?
Someone like who?
Like Warren Buffett.
Like Warren Buffett, if he was, because he had all this wealth. Presumably,
a lot of times what they do is they set up a blind trust. So he would, you know, step away from Berkshire Hathaway, his company, and let someone else run it and avoid any conflict of interest, basically by being ignorant of what they're doing.
And have no idea what they were doing, so that no matter what decisions he made, he wouldn't know, except he could look at their stock price in the paper every
and watch
morning.
It plummet without him.
I think it would be a tough one, but I think he'd be a great pick if he could get in there somehow.
All right. Andy, thanks very much for the call.
You too.
Alan in Flagstaff, Arizona, writes to nominate Governor Janet Napolitano of Arizona for Attorney General, former State Attorney General, very effective governor halfway through her second term, but please don't take her before the end of her term. Larry in Eugene, Oregon, nominates for Attorney General Eric Holder, Assistant Attorney General in the Clinton administration, known to be an advisor to Barack Obama as well. Nicholas in Fairfield, Connecticut, writes to nominate Think Out of the Box at a new cabinet-level Department of Peace, and I would nominate Jimmy Carter for that position. Of course, Congressman Dennis Kucinich of California has often proposed the creation of a Department of Peace, and Jimmy Carter, not only a former president, but a Nobel Prize winner. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Let's go to Scott, and Scott's with us from Elyria in Ohio.
I'd like to propose Juan Cole for National Security Advisor.
And why Juan Cole?
He's a professor of history at the University of Michigan. He's the author of Informed Comment, a blog I have read every day probably for the last 5 years. And he's fluent in Arabic, Farsi, and I believe Urdu as well.
And obviously as a scholar, well-versed and well-read, but nevertheless not a lot of administrative experience. You need some of that, don't you think?
He was an Army brat, though, so I think he knows the planet pretty well.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Scott, and the suggestion. Charlie in New York City writes to nominate Richard Holbrooke as a President Obama's Secretary of State. He proved himself in the Balkans under President Clinton, would do a fine job doing the same for war-torn areas around the world. He would also be committed to solving crises in the darkened corners of the world, the out-of-reach regions where conventional diplomacy has become more difficult since the collapse of the Soviet Union. Let me turn back to you, Blake Hounshell. A lot of different nominees for Secretary of State.
Yeah, and Richard Holbrooke prominent among them. Interesting story about Richard Holbrooke is that he really wasn't close to the Obama foreign policy team for a while. So it would be a surprise if he got picked if Obama wins, because he was more of a Hillary Clinton guy.
Strobe Talbott, another name that comes up a lot.
Yeah, president of the Brookings Institution. He's extremely well-respected in Washington, former U.S. ambassador to Russia. He just knows an incredible amount about the world, and everyone respects him here.
On the other side, Richard Haass is a name.
He was the head of state, the State Department's Policy Planning Department. under Bush in the first term, and he's now the head of the Council on Foreign Relations. He would be another great pick.
That's Blake Hounshell of the Foreign Policy Magazine. We're talking about their list, the Dream Team. Also with us is Brian Gilmore, a public interest lawyer, writer, and columnist for EbonyJet.com. And they, of course, made their picks for the cabinet and vice president as well. Right. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to Nina, is that right, in Tucson, Arizona?
It's pronounced like the number nine.
Number nine, excuse me.
Yeah. My nominations are Chuck D for Secretary of State, Alice Walker for Secretary of Education, and Russell Means for Secretary of Defense.
They would write beautiful memos, but do you think that they could actually administrate their departments?
Chuck D and Alice Walker, possibly. Russell Means, maybe not so much of a chance.
Maybe not so much of a chance. Thanks very much for the suggestion. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's see if we can go now to Mitch, and Mitch is with us from Rochester in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Paul Krugman for Secretary of Treasury.
Paul Krugman, the New York Times columnist and the, I believe it's Princeton economist, is that right?
Correct.
And recently got a big prize.
Yeah, Nobel Prize for economics.
Nobel Prize for economics. Are any Nobel laureates on your list, Blake Hounshell?
No, I don't believe they are, but anything could happen in the future.
Brian Gilmore, what about you?
I don't have any myself.
See if we can get another caller on the line. And let's see if we can go now to Ramon. Ramon's with us from Miami in Florida.
I would say Al Gore for EPA.
Al Gore, the former vice president, is director of the Environmental Protection Association. He's a Nobel laureate, got half a one, and also got the Oscar. And, it's a pretty good double, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's better than the PowerPoint.
Ramon, thanks very much for the suggestion. Bye-bye. Let's go now to Mark. Mark, with us in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, I would nominate Samantha Power for Secretary of Defense.
Samantha Power's credentials are?
Samantha Power was, she wrote America in the Age of Genocide, I believe is the name of the book. She's an expert on genocide and with the Kennedy School of Government.
And yeah. Samantha Powers is a name of Blake Hounshell that does get mentioned from time to time in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I mean, she had a kind of spectacular flame out this season when she called Hillary Clinton a monster.
There was that little problem. And again, the confirmation hearings might be really
that would be fun to watch.
Yes, I would wonder about that myself. I was wondering about that myself.
But a very smart and accomplished woman. And I don't know if defense would be the right place for her, but I think she could definitely have a role in a future administration.
Thank you very much for the call, Mark.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Gwyneth. And Gwyneth with us from Kittery in Maine.
Yes, hello. I recommend Colin Powell for Secretary of State.
Colin Powell to make a return as Secretary of State. Of course, he famously endorsed Barack Obama just a couple of weeks ago. What do you think about that, Brian Gilmore?
Well, I have Colin Powell down as Secretary of Defense because I think he should come back. I think he was the one who spoke about the war and said certain things about how what should happen after the war and should have been was done improperly. I say let him come in and fix it right now.
And you made that nomination even before he'd endorsed Senator Obama.
Right, this was back in June. I put him down for defense. I felt as though let him back in.
I wonder, Blake Hounshell, do you think, did anybody mention Colin Powell in a redux?
Well, I had a funny conversation with Tom Clancy, the author, as part of this, and he didn't want to give all the picks, but he kept mentioning Colin Powell for every possible job. So I think there's a lot of support out there for the former Secretary of State.
Thanks very much for the suggestion, Gwyneth.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Here's some more emails. Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin, suggests we have to go to Susie Orman as Secretary of the Treasury. what would they do on public television? David in Wilmar, Minnesota, nominates Andrew Bacevich as Secretary of State. I heard his interview with Bill Moyers. Bacevich is realistic about world affairs. And Donna in Springfield, Massachusetts, nominates Michael Pollan for Secretary of Agriculture. He's become an expert on our food system. He understands the ecological, social, economic, and political issues. At the same time, he believes correctly that our agricultural system has to take more into account than farmers, and particularly needs to account for eaters. He would bring a fresh, credible, and intelligent mind to what is now a pressing issue, how to feed the people. Well, thank you both for your time today. Blake Hounshell, online editor for Foreign Policy Magazine. We swiped a lot of their idea, their foreign policy list, The Dream Team. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Brian Gilmore, a public interest lawyer, writer, and columnist for EbonyJet.com. We stole their idea, too. They came out with this earlier in June. Thanks very much to both of you for coming in.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Coming up, if you're not planning to vote on Tuesday, give us a call and tell us why. Maybe our next guest can change your mind. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. It is safe to say there is unprecedented interest in this year's election. With a week to go, many more than ever have turned out to vote early, and election officials around the country expect record numbers next Tuesday. But that still leaves many millions who will not cast a ballot. Maybe they don't care, maybe they're busy, maybe they don't think their vote matters. A voter that this year we're going to call Ricky. We got that name from Jeff Inglis and Jim Rada, who join us in just a moment, and we want to hear from those of you who don't plan to vote this year. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, the email address talk@npr.org. And now let me introduce Jeff Inglis, the managing editor of the Portland Phoenix, who joins us from member station WMEA in Portland, Maine. Nice to have you in the program, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
And tell us, who is Ricky?
Well, Ricky is a college friend of ours. A group of us, Jim and I, and some other friends, all went to college together, and Ricky's a classmate of ours. And actually, I'll throw it to Jim to explain exactly how this encounter happened, because it was Jim who had the encounter.
Jim Rod is the founder of Ricky Pack and joins us from his home in New Hampshire. Nice to have you on the program too, Jim.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Neil. Just want to make a correction. I'm actually in Vermont.
Ah, well, I apologize for that.
That's okay. That's okay. So let me tell you a little bit about Ricky Pack and how it got started. Ricky is, like Jeff said, a friend of ours from college, and I think we all have this friend. He's somebody who we may have lost touch with over time. You know, I hadn't seen Ricky for maybe 5 years up until a couple weeks ago. And I got into a conversation with him, and, you know, he's the same old Ricky, nice to see him again. And it turns out that he was feeling a little bit undecided about whether or not he was going to vote. He knew who he would vote for, but he didn't think he was going to get up and actually get out and do it.
And the source of this apathy was what?
You'd have to ask Ricky. I really couldn't tell you. I really couldn't tell you.
Well, Jeff Inglis, you've said that you think this is the most important election of our lifetimes.
I think it is. This is a time like none, anyone my age, I'm 35, have seen. I mean, I think there have been possibly more important elections in American history and potentially around the world. But this is a time, I mean, Colin Powell said it the other day, talking about a transformative change that could come to Washington and frankly, to the entire country.
Well, in your story about Ricky, you said it was important to vote. You didn't say who it was important to vote for.
No, that's true. I think, I leave voting decisions up to individuals. Each of us is alone in the polling box, unless we bring kids or a friend to show what it's like. I think it's up to people to decide, but ultimately I think it's really up to people to decide to vote. Their vote counts. Their vote matters. Every vote counts. And expressing an opinion is the most important thing they can do.
And Jim Rada, when you realized that Ricky might not come out to vote, you did something about it.
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing I did was I emailed my friend Ricky, because I'm in Vermont, as I said at the top of the show here, and my electoral vote really is not going to count for a whole lot in the grand scheme of things, because, you know, we're going for Obama no matter what happens. But Ricky lives in a swing state. He lives in Nevada. So I emailed him, and he said, oh, I'm not going to vote. And so then I said, oh, man, I got to do something about this. So I sent a message out to maybe 5-10 friends. I, you know, made up a little thing in Photoshop. I'm starting Ricky Pack. It's a grassroots political action committee, and the whole purpose of Ricky Pack is just to get Ricky to vote. And from there, it has just ballooned like you wouldn't believe.
Hmm.
We have a website now, rickypack.org. That's R-I-C-K-E-Y, Pack, P-A-C.org. And there we've managed to collect a whole bunch of voting resources and arguments for why Ricky should go out and vote.
Well, not just
our Ricky, but every Ricky out there.
Well, we're going to get some Rickies out there on the line and get some of their emails and see how you might try to persuade them against their firm belief that this is not the year to vote. And so if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And why don't we begin with Phil. And Phil's with us from Wilmington in Delaware.
Yes, I'm not voting because I feel that both parties do not have the American interests at heart. Both of them are too corporate.
There are more than two candidates running this year.
That's true, but there are only two candidates that have a reasonable chance of winning.
But you could bolster the numbers for Ralph Nader, help build the Green Party, or vote Libertarian.
Yes, but that's not reasonably. That's not going to happen. I mean,
so you'd only vote for a winner.
Well, yeah, I'm a realist.
Jim Rotter, what would you tell Phil?
Well, I'd tell Phil that I feel his pain. You know, I understand what it's like to feel like your vote doesn't matter. And I would say that there's all kinds of local stuff that really, really matters. And that's where your vote can make a difference. You know, go ahead. You know, if you think that both of the parties at the, running for president are corrupt or too corporate or too far right or too far left or whatever, that's fine. But, you know, think about your local school board, your sheriff, you know, the people who are gonna affect your life. Out. Those are the people that you got to vote for.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Phil, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Here's an email from Bill in Chicago. I'm a 24-year-old highly educated urbanite who is not voting simply because my vote won't count. Living in a non-swing state makes my input irrelevant to this democracy, or should I say Ohioocracy. I understand someday we will have proportional voting here in Illinois, as some states already do, but until then I see very little reason to vote. And as you noted, Jim Rada, you're in Vermont. Vermont, also not a swing state.
Yeah. In fact, we're probably the least swingy of the non-swingy states. I mean, the town that I live in is one of the ones that has a standing arrest warrant out for Bush and Cheney should they happen to show up here. So you can tell just how non-swingy we are. To that emailer, I would say that your job in a non-swing state is to go out and find your Ricky. You got to find somebody in a swing state who's a friend of yours, who's not going to vote, and get them to vote.
I'd add to that, if I can.
Go ahead, Jeff Inglis.
That Vermont, what if all the Obama supporters in Vermont decided that, you know, boy, Obama's got it, you know, he's going to win Vermont. I'm not going to go vote. Well, guess who'd win Vermont? Not Obama, right? Everybody's got to go vote, whether you're in a swing state or whether you're not in a swing state. I mean, swing states are creations of pundits, of the media, and of campaign analysts. But if, you know, New Hampshire used to not be a state that people thought was a battleground, it went for Kerry in 2004. That was a big surprise to a lot of people who had expected a Republican to win.
If the Obama supporters failed to come out in Vermont, you'd be tempted to say maybe socialist workers.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Vermont? No way. No.
But the point is that even if you live in a swing state, you have to vote, or a non-swing state in a state that, you know, you're the only McCain supporter in Vermont or the only, you know, Obama supporter in Arizona or something.
You need to express your opinion. I'd like to add to what Jeff's saying about swing states. There are places that are where your vote proportionally counts even more than if you're in a swing state. I mean, I envy the swing state people because, you know, their vote's going to count for much, much more than mine will. But the people who live in places like Nebraska's 1st District, you know, Nebraska's one of two states that allocates its electoral votes proportionally.
Maine, the other
Maine's
one.
The other one.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, if you live in Omaha, and you are like a kingmaker this year. Seriously.
Let's get Henry on the line. And Henry's calling us from the non-swing state of Birmingham, Alabama.
Yes, I would just like to give my input on why I would not be voting. I think the Electoral College, especially for states like Vermont and from Alabama, I think it's an illusion of democracy. And I understand why it would be more important to vote in a swing state, but my vote ultimately doesn't matter. That's why I'm not going to vote. And I also don't feel comfortable with people trying to guilt you into voting or saying that you have to vote or it's your duty as an American. I think it's a right, but it's also my right not to vote. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay, Henry. Do you feel badly about guilting people, Jim Rana?
No, that's the entire purpose of Ricky Pack. I sometimes reasoned arguments just don't work. And you've got to lean on your friends and shame them and guilt them and make their college nickname a matter of national importance, which is what we've tried to do with Ricky Pack.
What's the college nickname?
It's Ricky. It's Ricky. His real name, I'm not going to reveal on the air because, you know, we just don't need people banging on Ricky's door. But his college nickname is Ricky.
Here's an email we got from John in Oklahoma. I feel like voting for president and senator is a lost cause in this deep red state. I live in Tulsa. It is almost as conservative here as Utah. A Democrat often feels very out of place here. Yet the last time I looked, I think Oklahoma had a Democratic majority at the legislative level in the state house, a majority that a lot of Democrats there fear they will lose this year. Republicans, of course, looking forward to that. So there are some contested elections on the state level in the state of Oklahoma. We're talking about Ricky, a man who decided not to vote, and the people who have tried to talk him into changing his mind. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's another email, this one from Sarah in New Orleans. On Friday, I waited an hour and a half in line to vote early, and after seeing that it would be at least another 3 hours in line, I gave up. Saturday morning, I arrived at New Orleans City Hall 30 minutes before the doors opened, waited in line for 4 hours, and then had to leave for a prior engagement. I will be out of the country on November 4th, and I can't absentee vote because I'm only out of town for the actual voting day, not for early voting week. I feel like I tried my hardest to vote, and even now the line outside City Hall is a block long. That is why I am not voting. Sarah's got a problem that a lot of people may have this year. Jeff Inglis?
Yeah, and actually I want to respond briefly to the commenter from Oklahoma as well, to which I would say you may feel lonely as a Democrat in Oklahoma, but you can make others feel less lonely the day after the election when they see how many other Democrats voted in Oklahoma.
Okay.
In terms of waiting in line, I mean, boy, that's I commend. Was it Sarah?
Sarah
was
yeah.
her name. Sarah, yeah. I commend her for patience and effort. I think that is a problem, and I would suggest that she contact her, you know, the people at City Hall, who frankly may be too busy to return her call until after the election, but to register a complaint. I think if that many people want to vote and they're having to take, you know, half a day off of work or a whole day off of work and end up not even able to vote. That's government not working. that's what we need to fix. We need to make sure that everyone who wants to vote can vote.
I agree. I think Oregon's got it right. I mean, they do all mail-in voting up there, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
High turnout rate, too.
Yeah.
Maine has absentee ballot where you don't have to give an excuse. I'm going to be in town on election day. I'm actually probably going to drive past my polling place on my way between my house and work. But I cast an absentee ballot. I think those kinds of laws and those kinds of arrangements are very effective and actually help promote democracy and promote people voting. And frankly, they help people like Sarah from feeling disenfranchised, literally. From the process.
Yeah, I've got a similar situation here in Vermont. We've got we have early voting here, but I'm opting not to go early voting because I really like going out to the polling places, and I really want to bring my kids, and that's something I think that everybody who has the means should do. The people in our town here, they've got it figured out. They have cookies available for kids at voting, so kids early on learn to associate their public duty with sugar.
I hope they don't discriminate on the basis of age, because there are a few of us older voters who like those cookies, too.
No, anybody who wants can have cookies.
All right. Are you guys doing anything, by the way, on Election Day to help get people to the polls?
Go ahead, Jim.
I'm sorry, Jeff. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that I may not. I'm the managing editor of an alternative weekly paper here in Maine, and Tuesday is my deadline day. I've stolen out briefly for this, but I will probably be on deadline and pretty exhausted by the time I get home. Though if someone said, boy, you know, Jeff, there's no way I'm going to get to the polls without help, I would, you know, try and find them a ride, you know, I'd do what I could. Absolutely.
Jim Rotter, what about you?
Yeah. I'm actually volunteering with the Obama campaign on Election Day.
All right. Let's see if we get Karen on the line. Karen with us from Charlotte, North Carolina, and that is very much a swing state this year.
Yes, it sure is. And I am voting, but my babysitter is not voting. And her reasoning is that she has family in the military. She does not like the Republican policy on the Iraq war, so she will not vote for a Republican. But at the same time, she won't vote for somebody that she says is named Obama.
Well, Jim Roddick, can you give Karen any advice that she might be able to use to guilt trip her babysitter?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. You know, I'm on a friend's kind of right-wing email list, and I get stuff like this, you know, about Barack Hussein Obama and how that, how that somehow disqualifies him for the presidency. And what I would say is that having the last name Obama doesn't make you any less of an American than somebody who's got the last name Smith or Jones or Lee or whatever. And one of the things that makes this country great is that we can have people from pretty much any background become president of the United States. I mean, it makes me wonder if people had a problem with Martin Van Buren.
Well, just in my lifetime, Karen, people had the same problem with a man named Kennedy. So,
yeah. All right, well, thank you.
All right, Karen, good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we can get a couple of more emails in. This from Cherie in Chicago. My husband and I just moved to Chicago from Phoenix. It was too late to request an absentee ballot for Arizona, too late to register in Illinois. Ah, we're sick about it. I think we will end up stumping for Obama next Tuesday so that we can sleep that night. And we'll end with this email from Clinton in Wells, Minnesota. If you don't vote, you have no right to complain, and I don't understand how you can call yourself an American. Well, talk about guilt trips. Yeah. That's a pretty good one. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your time today.
Sure, Neil.
Thanks very much.
Jeff Inglis snuck out of his job as managing editor of the Portland Phoenix to join us from WMEA in Portland, Maine. And Jim Rada joined us on the phone. He's the head of Ricky Pack. He's on the phone from his home in Vermont. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.